Call the meeting to order of the Oceana Community Service District regular meeting of December 10th. Roll call, please.
Director Bernay.
Here.
Director Angelo. Director Colwell.
Here, and it is May 10th.
I'm sorry, that isn't what I said.
December.
May 10th.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
President White.
Here. Stand for the flag salute.
Attention salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Agenda review. Do we have any changes tonight in the agenda?
President White, members of the board, we have modified recommendations on agenda item number 8E. On a review of the approval of the cash disbursements, we have provided a modified staff report. With the item that has been removed from the disbursements, we have attached the register to the back of the related invoice to the California Water Board. The removal of the invoice is because the fees being charged on the CSD to the CSD on the invoice were based on the CSD not being classified as a disadvantaged community, and the California Water Board has recently started an income survey to reassess the loss of the community's disadvantaged community status. We would like to confirm with the California Water Board before sending payment on if the invoice with the current fees, which are higher than what they would be if we were classified as a disadvantaged community, would be refunded to us or reimbursed for the difference once we do or do not get that status back. So the adjustment will decrease the total cash disbursements from $62,005.65 to $51,819.65. So at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for the approval of staff recommendations in 8B. As modified.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other changes? Anything else on the agenda review?
I don't have
anything. Can I entertain a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda as modified.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 4-0 with one absentee. Move on to closed session.
Would you like to take public comment before closed session?
Well, I don't see anybody present to take closed session. So, I mean,
for the record, it's done. So,
yes.
The board will adjourn to closed session. There are three items, 5A, B, and C. Number A, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, this is conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District v. Santa Maria. Item B, pursuant to Government Code 54957.6, conference with labor negotiators. 5C, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9, conference with district counsel regarding anticipated litigation.
Thank you very much. Okay, move into closed session. Resume the meeting at 6:20 p.m.
Maybe.
Move on to my agenda. I would call for, excuse me, we need to report out of closed session.
The report out of closed session on items 5A, B, and C is no reportable action.
Thank you. Move on to item 6, public comment for items not on the agenda. People would like to come forward to speak on items not on the agenda. Would my guests like to come speak? No.
Tony's going to do the operations report, and then we're going to cover the slides in the event.
Okay.
And then we'll comment on that specific group.
Okay, thank you. So there would be, I don't see anybody else coming forward for public comment on the closed session. So we'll move to item 7, special presentations and reports and staff reports. I will call for Tony Marciano.
Good evening, board. Tony Marciano. Lopez is currently at 62.1% full, which is 30,655 acre feet. We had one SSO last month, which spilled approximately 25 gallons out of a cleanout. Our current deliveries are 149 acre feet for the year, and we've pumped only 0.76 of an acre foot. We had 7 customer service calls. We had 2 after-hours call-outs, and there was regarding 2,700 Cienega. It was a 2-inch main they have in there, and our responsibility stops at the meter. So basically, we shut the backflow off for them so they can turn it on at their convenience because it's their property, and explain to them if they ever have a break, shut the backflow off, and you really don't need to call us. But they always end up calling us. The other one was at Laverne. House valve got shut off again. Don't know why or who, but we got called out. There's no water at the house. We also had 7 work orders, 15 USAs. As you know, as you drive around here, you got the gas company doing a lot of repairs on their gas mains. That's where these USAs are getting created a little more than usual. All right, we trimmed the trees over here by the old fire station and the empty lot. Quite a bit of weed eating at Well 8 and the yard. I attended a Lopez meeting, and they are suppressing the pH. And they had to change their water permit, which is going to now affect us a little bit more sampling for lead and copper. And that's coming down the pipeline, basically, here shortly. It'll be a summertime event, even though we do lead and copper every 3 years. Cleaned out the lift station again. We installed a new water service line at 2341 Ocean. There's going to be a new home going in there. So basically gave it new water, and we'll be doing some clean outs at that property here shortly. We finished our sewer lateral basically inspection, see who has it and who doesn't. So we've completed that, and just got to turn that over to the office staff to so they can finalize it. Any questions?
And in following up, Tony, I was figured that we would cover our illegal dumping event. So I'm going to tag on to Tony's operations report. Over the weekend, and it was covered in the Tribune and today's newspaper, we had a significant illegal dumping event. And in discussing with the Tribune, one of the important points was to reemphasize that we have our enforcement ordinance, which is really important. In February, your board adopted 4 additional programs to help with the incentives of promoting a cleaner community, including the smart app, cell phone smart app, adopt a can, adopt an alley, and the neighborhood cleanups. And so we've got a couple of pictures, and this was a really good coordinated event. The Sheriff McDonald and one of the deputies came out and worked with Tony. President White was there. I was there. We have residents and from the community that were there. And I've got to figure out how to do my page down now. Or next slide. So this is like an entire truckload, if not more, of debris. When we find these kind of situations, they're often associated with evictions. And we've had a few in the community where they have material where the sheriff's department and our staff, Tony and the crews, will go out there. And in the past, we've had situations where we find mail, and then the deputy from the Sheriff's Department will go and visit somebody. And we've had situations where the individuals then will clean it up themselves. That's a difference. This stuff was pretty well bagged and everything. So we wanted to make sure it got taken care of pretty quickly. And we also wanted to make sure that there was some media coverage about what's happening in Oceano and the efforts that the district is doing to address it. And I think the Tribune did a really good job in covering it. The first thing that Jason did then is went up and put in some tape and pillars just to prevent people from getting in there and ripping the bags open and making a bad situation worse. And then Tuesday morning, we were able to coordinate. South County Sanitary Services came out. Obviously, that's their truck to the left. There's Jason, who was taking the lead on it. And then set up the table so that our crews and the sheriff deputies could go through and find out whether or not they could find any incriminating evidence in order to talk to somebody who may have done it. Commander McDonald and his deputy, and right now I forget the name of the deputy. So this is when they're initiating and starting to open the debris up and trying to identify what's in there. And now here we've got stuff laid out on the table, and some of the sanitary services guys are taking some of the other debris in the background. There's Commander McDonald as well helping out. And I got to tell you, the Sheriff's Department is just wonderful on this stuff. When we had talked to Commander McDonald on Monday, he just said, tell us what time we're going to be there. And again, they've supported us in other situations, and were there for us today as well. Actually discarding some of it, moving it along. A little hoop. And there's one of our local residents and Tribune reporter, Tribune photographer, finishing up the job. There has been some stuff that was furniture, and just so it's a little bit hard to imagine the situation, but it's pretty extensive. And this picture is actually of the Spanish-speaking news station, Univision. Came out today and interviewed me and Carrie in order to go through how does the Smart app work. And I thought that was great because they're very concerned about our communities and wanted to make sure that they had good coverage on the Spanish-speaking news station as well. So a little bit of a slideshow there on addressing the situation. And then the Tribune also did a video clip, which... Yeah. Is it the one with the little arrow? Yeah. Hit escape. Yeah. And it's about a 1 minute video clip, and I got it.
Okay.
and want to make sure to thank the Tribune for being responsive. Caitlin Leslie had done the article last November regarding the eminent domain and some of the county's responsibilities in the community, and we gave her a call to see if she wanted to do a follow-up story. I thought that she did a great job. And with that, perhaps we might have somebody from the public who wants to speak.
Yes.
Okay, my name is Claudia Hartman, and I am one of the residents on the property that got trashed. First, I want to thank the staff of Oceana Community Service District, Jason, who was wonderful, Nicole and Carrie, South County Sanitation staff, the Sheriff's Department. Karen, thank you so much for showing up. Really appreciate it. The Tribune for coming together and doing such a wonderful, wonderful job. I call it a visible intervention. And the people really got the attention of people in our neighborhood, because after everyone left, I got a lot of people coming up to me saying, what is going on? Or isn't this a terrible thing that happened in our community? And so I wanted to thank them. And when I was talking to Paavo in the meeting prior to the 9 o'clock event the day before, he wanted to let us know that he was going to do this on our property. And I was telling him what I would do as a private citizen to make people aware that I was taking pride in my property and what I was going to install so people would know that we were taking, we were becoming very aware of what was happening. So I brought my little kit. First, I went out and got a motion detector for that area. And 9 o'clock last night, I was marching back and forth, making sure that it worked before we installed it. So when someone comes down that alleyway now, that motion detector will come on. Secondly, they're coming out with a lot more cost-effective programs on these little cameras that you can install, and then it connects to your smartphone, and you can, if somebody moves back there and that light goes on, then it alerts your smartphone and you've got the camera going. But I wanted to make it even more visual, so I made a sign. And we're going to post it in the back of the yard, where not only people can see right next to the fence, but I wanted it to be visible with people kind of coming into our neighborhood to let them know, first, that we were taking pride in service, in the security of our property, but to also plant the idea that this community is taking pride, because you look at that and you say, well, if they're doing it, then how many other people are installing the security? You know, there's only so much sheriff time, there's only so much that the cities can do, and so I think we need to step in and fill in a piece of that puzzle for surveillance of our communities. As a result of this wonderful intervention, I did have two people come forward and tell me they actually saw the guy doing it. And they did call 911, I think. They were Spanish-speaking people, not real. We were trying to communicate. So sometimes they have a tendency to call 911, but they really don't want to come forward and do much more than that. So the big issue really is a reliable reporting system, some kind of a mechanism that people know that they can call. And so I just wrote down a few thoughts. One is when Neighborhood Watch gets put into place, they put those signs up. So I was thinking maybe an illegal dumping sign with the fine and the citation and a hotline number. People are more inclined to call a hotline number than just a number that's there. The second thing is staging probably more visual interventions. I don't know if it's cost effective, but it got the attention of the people in our part of the neighborhood. And so if you have a situation where it's a big event or a big amount of trash, maybe you can do another one of those and get that attention again. My sister-in-law came up with this. If it's a money issue, a lot of people don't have the money. It was going to cost me $100 to get that trash removed on my own. If they have a money issue, I know you do the 2 times a year thing, but if someone's moving and they're not within that time frame, maybe a voucher a low-cost voucher they can come in and get to have it done. Because the sanitation department has the facilities. If you use a private company, they usually have a $100 minimum on, so that can get pretty costly. And then using mailers in your utility bills and your sanitation bills, and maybe that's an avenue. I don't know what the procedures are, but that might be an avenue for an educational flyer to be installed in there. So all I can say is I've been in many, many communities, and I was incredibly impressed with how responsive everybody was, and I wanted to thank them again. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. We were very happy that we could help.
Oh, we were delighted. Thank you. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
And in terms of future agenda items later on the agenda, we can probably speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe a little amendment or two to our plan we already have.
Can we do like a reminder on the smart app and things? People would know how to go about doing that again. And the adopt cans and stuff.
As far as staff reports go, I don't have any additional. And again, Commander McDonald was there, and so I guess we can resume with item number 7.
Okay, well, I see next on the line is Five Cities Fire, and I'll go ahead and give the reports on that. The first thing was I had the joy of initiating the new fire truck, which we had a thank you again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We had a special program on April 27th where we brought the new fire truck in, and I got to hold the hose with the other two members of the Five Cities Fire Authority Board, and the old truck that's being retired, we used it to spray water on the new truck. Got to get those fire trucks dirty as quick as possible. And the new truck is now in service in Grover Beach. So engine 2 in Grover Beach, you'll see it. It's red and black. And it looks, if people want to know what it looks real square. They said it's actually smaller than some of the other trucks we've had, but taller and more compact. So that was the good news. The bad news was this past Saturday we had a pretty serious fire, a residential structure fire at the Sunrise Terrace Mobile Home Park in Arroyo Grande. Two mobile homes were destroyed. A third one was damaged. And it happened in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday when all that wind was blowing, and Sunrise Terrace is off Valley Road up against the hillside. And our fire department moved very quick, and the truck, the great big hook and ladder, whatever you want to call it, the big snorkel truck, everybody wonders why that's needed, because we don't have any 10-story buildings. They were able to go upwind from the burning mobile home and use that truck to put a literal shower of water that kept the fire from advancing with the wind. It absolutely, I could see it from Halcyon Road. It just literally was this huge, massive shower of water that they just kept on it, and it kept the fire from moving with the wind. It kept the sparks and was cooling the air. And some of the people in the trailer, the mobile home park, told Chief Lieberman that they figured that all the way up the hill the structures would burn. And with that, the quick response from that big truck that everybody wonders why we needed it, and the house next to the house that burned was not damaged because of that huge shower of water. It was very impressive to see as well.
And you made it there too?
Yeah, I made it. But there was two families burned out. One of them, the people whose home where the fire started, and they don't have a cause yet, they'd gone grocery shopping, and when they got home, their house was down. And they lost everything. The people who live next door, it was a summer or a vacation home for them, and they live in Montana, so we don't know much about that. but the Red Cross is helping, and the automatic mutual aid worked fine. And I thought the funny thing, Ricky Heath, Battalion Chief Ricky Heath, lives up in Grover, and he stepped out of his house to respond to the fire, and he felt the wind and called before he got to the fire, before he saw anything, before he literally left his driveway, called a second response. He knew because of the wind and because of where the fire was, they were going to need everything. So, anyway, that's the report on that. And move on to General Manager. Do you have other reports? No. And McDonald, it does not seem to be here. Okay, so we move on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Coldwell.
I attended the RAC meeting on May 3 in San Luis Obispo. Again, RAC, WRAC, is the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and the purpose of that committee is to advise the County Board of Supervisors on numerous issues. There are a lot of very talented and energetic people on the RAC committee, and they work very hard on these issues. Some of the times we fail in getting the attention of the Board of Supervisors, or they choose to ignore us, which is sometimes frustrating for many people. In any event, this meeting on May 3rd, we had a staff report on the feasibility study for cloud seeding. Now, cloud seeding, first of all, they have to study the weather reports so that if they see a possible rain system moving into the area, that's when they seed. And they try to seed at a lower level, maybe 1,700 feet or so, and then get the silver iodite that will flow up into the clouds and create a more massive rain. I have to say, it's an intriguing idea, sort of like rain dances, but in any event, it requires a certain stretch to see and be able to measure the effectiveness of this. Now, this particular study, it was, you know, rather extensive. It cost $20,000 to put the study together, and they said, there is a feasibility for this cloud seeding. It would probably work. They guessed it might result in a 9 to 17% increase in the amount of rain. And then there are a lot of arguments against it. The people generally to the east of the cloud seeding would say, you stole our water. In any event, there's a lot of speculation involved in it, and I don't know. This study proposed like a $312,000 project to seed the clouds, both from the ground as well as from the air, and I'm skeptical that it'll ever come to fruition. Perhaps more important for the RAC was a discussion about what to do and how to change the bylaws of the committee to accommodate all of the new GSAs that the County of San Luis has agreed to help formulate and pay for. And following this discussion, which was a very broad discussion, it was then agreed that the entire matter would be continued to the next meeting on June 7. It's a rather unwieldy issue, so we'll see what happens with the bylaws and if there are any changes to it. So that's the RAC report.
Vice President Austin? Director Angelo?
No, I have nothing.
Director
Bonnet? I also have nothing to report.
Well, I went to the last South San Luis Obispo Sanitation Board meeting. And in most aspects, it was a rather, we got a lot of business done, but it was mostly routine. And I should say it was celebration of the First Amendment, because there was more than an hour of public testimony on various items. And I am guilty of not following up on how the process went with the Coastal Commission. I think that was on May 6th.
Today.
Okay. Well, I have not followed up on it yet.
I haven't heard. Have you heard anything?
I haven't heard.
So that would have really, so we'll have to get that later. Thank you. And now we'll call for public comment on special presentations and reports. Seeing nobody come forward, I'll move to the consent agenda. And I will get a call for a public comment on the consent agenda. Okay. Discussion on the consent agenda items.
I'm happy to see the will serve letter for the Melodrama's new building on there.
Yeah.
It came before the advisory council. It's going to be a very nice addition to Front Street. So
I'm
glad to see that moving forward. Glad to see a new backhoe coming up. Looks good. Do you have an old one for sale now?
No, she was wishing she could borrow it.
No, can't do that. I have that same wish. Can't do it. No, just a reminder that the motion needs to be staff recommendations as modified.
Yes.
So I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda items with the modification of agenda item 8B, the revisal of the cash disbursements.
I'd second that.
Go ahead. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to business items with more public comment. Okay, then I move to business item 9A, consideration of a recommendation to approve an amendment of Section 30 of the Memorandum of Understanding with the Service Employees International Union Local 620, increasing the benefit payment gap by up to $400 per month for employee.
President White, members of the board, the existing Memorandum of Understanding between the district and SEIU, Service Employee International Union Local 620, was approved on October 14, 2015, and it expires on June 30, 2018. That agreement specifically provided for a reopener on the benefit payment cap for the third year of the MOU, which starts on July 1st and then goes through the term of the agreement, June 30, 2018. We have met and conferred with union representatives, and the results of that is the amendment that is on the agenda and ready for approval today. The increase in the benefit payment cap closely reflects the increase in the cost of health insurance since July of 2014. It essentially means that those increases have been paid for by the employees for the first 3 years, and then, as proposed, the district will be picking up those increases next fiscal year. The overall increase represents about 1.85% of the district's estimated personnel costs and approximately 0.33% of the district's estimated total expenditures for fiscal year 2017-18. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I think we've got some excellent employees, and we're in a position where we can afford to pick up these payments, and I think it's well deserved. I'm glad to see that it may very well come to fruition.
I concur.
I certainly agree.
Just don't ask me what the future of healthcare is going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a big question mark right now. But this certainly helps address what's transpired over the last 3-4 years.
Entertain a motion?
Public comment?
Oh, Artie. ask for a public comment to start, but I need public comment on each one also.
Probably just a clarification. You certainly could have asked for public comment on all the business items up front or one-on-one. I should have asked for clarification. But at this point in time, I'd recommend public comment on this item specifically.
Okay. A public comment on this item?
Shirley Gibson, Halcyon. I support the raise.
Thank you. Anyone else? Motion?
I would move that as a board we approve the increase in the benefit cap by up to $400 per employee.
Second.
All in favor?
For purposes of clarification, it's as the amendment attached to the staff report?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Second.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Technical stuff is difficult. 9B, a verbal report from legal counsel on the recent state Supreme Court ruling regarding public records on private electronic devices. You are up.
Thank you, President White, directors of the board. This is just kind of a brief update. There's no action required for this item on behalf of your board, but it's to make you aware, as well as the employees of the district, in regards to a March 2017 Supreme Court ruling that clarified some questions that had been existing in uncertainty as far as the reach of the Public Records Act request in California. This case involved a citizen who requested disclosure of public records from the city of San Jose regarding the development agency's efforts, and specifically requesting emails and text messages that were exchanged between the city staff and various employees. This city declined to produce those records, saying that those records were not in the custody and care of the city itself. The Superior Court agreed. It went on appeal and then ultimately to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court reviewed it, and I provided for the public on the table out there, and I provided each of the directors of the board a copy of the case in case you want to have something to go to sleep to tonight reading. But essentially, the court took a very broad view of what is a public record, and although a strict reading of the Public Records Act refers to, you know, paper written documents, they said in the essentially in the world the way it is today, text messages and emails are as valid of a communication as anything else. And ultimately, the Supreme Court said that text messages and the emails between staff and employees of the city of San Jose were, in fact, public records, even though they were contained on their own personal private cell phones. Now, what that means to us and to your district's employees and to, I think, your board members itself is that, you know, you have to just be aware of this. You have to be aware of the fact that conducting any business on your phones could be subject to, you could be creating documents that are subject to a public records request. Now, there is a balancing in this, and the Supreme Court was very aware of this and discussed it, the balancing of privacy and your personal privacy and your employees' personal privacy versus the public's right to know. And essentially, the court did give some guidance to public agencies, yourself included, in that you or the employees of the district are not required to hand over your cell phones to your general manager and have him scour them for potential public records. But if a public records request comes in, you should be made aware of that request to the extent that there might implicate something that you had communications with, especially communications to and from board members, and you're kind of on your on your own good faith should review what you have and think about whether or not that is something that should be disclosed. You can, of course, stand on your rights to personal privacy, which you may put you in a position to sign a declaration stating that you have reviewed your own cell phone and determine there are no records responsive or records that are public records. And again, just because they're on your own personal device doesn't mean that that doesn't fall into the category of being held within the custody of the district itself. So I think just some things to consider, and Mr. Ogren and I have talked about it, is that in future it's to the extent you are communicating with your cell phones, like most of us do through emails or text messages, probably the best thing to do is to CC the general manager, CC the district staff, and just simply create it so that it falls within it, the district files, in a way that's easy for us to collect. And that would alleviate you from having to look through your own private records and trying to determine what is or what is not district business. And really, this is just a reminder for you and all of us that in the modern world, the business is business and the district's business, whether you conduct it on your phone or here in the office, is still a matter of public record. Did you have anything to add to that, Mr. Ogren? Oh, okay. Yeah. Pavo has attached as an exhibit here to your item B our public records retention the relevant portions of the public records retention program that your board adopted, I think last year, that does specifically identify the type of letters that are examples of records that are district records: letters, memorandums, emails, correspondence. And you can certainly take a look at this. This is, again, just a reminder for you and for the public to take a look at as well. Anything else? Any questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
It's so easy to duplicate these voluminous reports and whatever that we may get, in fact, from most of the county agencies, like the RAC committee that I'm on. I'll get email service of 30 pages of documents. And if a copy of that goes to Mr. Ogren, mm-hmm. Would I also need to either CC a file for the OCSD, as an example, or send it once again to Mr. Ogren? Or just delete it, or what?
Well, no, documents like that are already matters of public record. I think what we're really talking about is correspondence that is specific to certain issues related to the district. So what you're talking about is receiving just another document that's already a public record. So don't go too deep in the weeds on this as far as that is concerned. But anything that's a unique, specific document related to district business, just primarily, I would think of emails between you and constituents, emails between yourself directly and other agencies. That's the type.
So then if I get a notice or a letter from Mr. Ogren or the staff, that would be already a matter of public record. I don't have to worry about it.
Right. That's already a public record as far as it's communication from the district.
Thank you.
And I think if you look at the Supreme Court ruling, this was really specifically involved to private communications between staff members about a particular project, so about development efforts within the city of San Jose. So that's really what it's trying to capture.
You want to see it here. Anyone else?
Each director also has your own OCSD email account. You can all CC that, even if you don't use that email account on any, you know, regular basis. But certainly, if you see that I'm CC'd on something, then you know that we're going to evaluate it in terms of, is it a document that needs to be retained or not.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
So we shouldn't just forward all our emails to you, right?
Well, it's also with regard to items under the jurisdiction of the district, mm-hmm. right? So if two board members are emailing each other and it has nothing to do with district business, then you don't have to worry about it. Lastly, as we've already started this year, we've been working on updating our district's policies and procedures, so we'll figure out some language to provide, you know, some additional guidance as we move forward. But at least we wanted to, you know, cover the change based on the Supreme Court decisions. Thank you, Jeff. I will also mention that we have had some public records requests in the past where they have asked for correspondence, and we have sent that request to board members. So, in some ways, I feel like we're already following the guidance that the courts have given us with this recent decision.
Okay. Public comment on that item? Okay, moving forward. 9C, consideration of an ad hoc committee to review requests for proposals and consultant submittals on district plans and projects.
President White, members of the board, similar to item number 9B, quick discussion. And we have now a lot of our grant documents and agreements approved. I have the task of developing a number of requests for proposals consistent with the scope of work that's been provided. Water resource reliability program efforts, the local hazard mitigation plan efforts, the utility yard site plan. And so at this point in time, I'm really asking whether or not any board members might be interested in participating in an ad hoc committee to especially review the consultant proposals as they come in. I wasn't anticipating bringing the request for proposals back to your board because we've already had all the scopes of work already, on the agendas and discussed them at least in general. If in developing the request for proposals, I think that there's anything that requires board clarification, then yes, perhaps. I'm just not envisioning anything right now. One possibility is some of the disadvantaged community money that we're going to be getting, I guess, later this year. If through the development of the capital improvement program, we get further along than currently anticipated, and there's a possibility, we might want to rescope some of that disadvantaged community money from to specific projects, to developing design proposals for a specific project. And that would be great news because it means that we're able to move into a capital project sooner as opposed to later. And so if that's an example, if there is a change in strategy or a change in scope of work, obviously I'd bring it back to your board in advance. But when we actually get the proposals in from the different consulting firms, it's always good to have a number of different individuals reviewing those proposals, and to have a couple of board members participate with staff in evaluating those proposals would always be helpful, especially considering the limited number of staff that we have on board. And so that is really the substance of the item, is whether or not any individual board members might want to participate with staff in doing so. As an ad hoc committee for a limited purpose and limited time, it's not subject to the Brown Act. It would just be us getting together, reviewing the details of the proposals, and developing recommendations on who to hire, developing the recommendations for the board as a whole.
I would be interested in sitting on that as an ad hoc committee.
I would as well, yeah.
I think those two would do a great job.
Agreed.
Thank you. Well, I'm always available, but if nobody else will do it, I will. How's that?
How many did you need?
Two? We no more than two because we can't create a quorum.
No more than two.
And then my recommendation would be to take public comment and then do so through a formal motion.
Is there any public comment on that item? Seeing none. Oh.
Gary, this is, you guys look really really great. Did you consider maybe doing a little bit of, with that disadvantaged community money, doing a little bit of community outreach and bringing, having, you know, members of the community actively involved in some of that stuff and mobilizing, kind of like getting a little bit more for your dollar, you know?
Certainly, some of the grant money is specifically for community outreach. And so we are going to, the different grants each require community outreach. And so funding is allocated for that. Our idea is to try to sort of combine them into a single event or single multiple events. I think it would be stretching the public's interest to have an outreach at meeting on the Water Resource Reliability Program, and then a separate one on the Local Hazard Mitigation Plan, and then a separate one on what we're doing for our facilities planning, instead to have outreach meetings where we're really covering the different topics that the district is working on early and then during the process, and then when we're developing draft plans, and then in the conclusion. So it won't be just one meeting, but multiple meetings as we're working through the issues, but having them cover the different topics at the same time so we can give them updates on how we're doing on the various efforts, both at the community center as well as at the depot. I think both venues will work well here.
Thank you.
You need a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I'll make a motion that we appoint Lori Angelo and Andrew Brunet as the ad hoc committee to review requests for proposals and submittals on district plans and projects.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Nine D, update and discussion on water supplies, the 2016 NCMA annual report and the governor's termination of the drought state of emergency pursuant to executive order B-40-2017 set July 29th, 2017 as the date for a public hearing to consider rescinding district resolution 2014-15 regarding the drought emergency.
Madam President, members of the board, this is likely to be our agenda item today that is lengthier than the other ones. We really have primarily two topics. One is the updates on the water supplies and some of the strategies for how to utilize those supplies in this year and coming up. And the other is scheduling July 26th for a hearing to consider rescinding the drought emergency for the community. And I'm going to address them in sort of reverse order because the recommended hearing date on July 26th is really the shorter discussion.
July
29th?
26th? 26,
I have 29. I have 29.
We have two dates. I don't know.
I have 26.
Me too.
I have 26. Oh, I see. It's 29 here and 26 here. Yeah.
Well, that's a quick check on what is a Wednesday.
Well, I think...
So, yeah, it's on the agenda, it's 29, but on the report, it's 26.
Yeah. Okay, so it's the agenda that's
so on. So the 26th.
Thank you. Okay. It's correct in the report and
yes.
In error on the end. That's an easy typo to miss.
My apologies. We do put multiple eyes on these things, but sometimes they're easy to miss. First, talking about the July 26th, Wednesday, July 26th, the recommendation to have a public hearing in rescinding what is Resolution 2014-15. A couple of really important points is, first off, Oceano doesn't currently have any special water use restrictions. So July 26th isn't going to mark any special day where certain restrictions are lifted. In Resolution 2014-15, originally every other day watering schedules were established, but those were already rescinded. And the governor has already lifted mandatory conservation requirements, so your board action isn't necessary there. The prohibited water use still remains, and so I just want to run through those real quickly. All throughout California, the prohibited water uses that the governor is still mandating is there's no hosing off sidewalks, driveways, and other hardscapes where that water is going to run off. No, because if you're washing automobiles with hoses, you cannot wash automobiles. They have to have the shutoff nozzle. So a quick question comes up was, am I allowed to wash my car on a driveway because that's a hardscape? And the answer is, well, yeah, but that water can't run off into the gutter and run down the street. So happens to be that on my property, the driveway slopes back into the landscaping. I suppose some people might need to drive the car up on the grass in order to wash the car. So again, prohibitions. If you're washing your automobiles, you have to have the automatic. You have to be able to use a shut-off nozzle so it's not running. There's no using non-recirculated water in a fountain or other decorated water feature. You can't water lawns in a manner that causes runoff or within 48 hours of measurable precipitation. Not exactly sure what measurable precipitation is, but I think common sense comes into play there. And then no irrigating ornamental turf on public streets and medians. And we see a lot of the cities that have, you know, converted to drought tolerant landscaping. So those prohibitions against wasting water still exist, and they're going to continue. In essence, we don't need July 26th to tell us what we should or shouldn't do in those things. We do need to clean up our resolutions, but you know, the restrictions on water use have already been essentially lifted. The single important item of rescinding Resolution 2014-15 is that it will then trigger the 90-day requirement to adopt an ordinance establishing how Oceano Community Services District will transition from the current water rate structure to a drought conservation from the drought conservation rate to the post-drought conservation rate structure. And so in Ordinance 2015-1, which was adopted on April 20th of 2015, there's two rate structures in there. And there's the higher rates in order to promote conservation. And once that Resolution 2014-15 is rescinded, then we have to move to the other rate structure that has lower rates, which assume, of course, that people are going to start using more water once the drought is declared over. Ordinance 2015-1 provides the district a transition period for up to 3 years. So one of the logical things we need to do is we need to monitor consumption and how much people are using, because all of this is supposed to be revenue neutral. We're not seeking to generate any more money or any less money from customers. What we're simply trying to do is match water consumption with the rate schedules so that we, to the best degree possible, we can generate the targeted revenues that are necessary and that are established in the budget. The couple important reasons why July 26th is recommended is one is it gives us the ability to understand what the county may or may not do in terminating their drought proclamation, and how that might affect Zone 3 down here in the Five Cities area. July 26 also gives us the ability to read meters in July and provide us with the most up-to-date consumption and conservation data. July 26 provides us the ability to do so in the context of the 2017-2018 budget, because those budget hearings will be coming up in June. And although your board already adopted two-year budgets in June, we still need to look at them and compare them to actual revenues and actual expenses for this year. And everything is tracking pretty well. But that type of fiscal information is also going to be important in working on how is this three-year transition plan going to work. In summary, July 26 provides us with the ability to review those issues and then for your board to provide some tentative direction to staff on that developing that three-year transition plan. So I want to stop right now before going into the water supply update and ask whether or not there's any questions with regard to, you know, the recommendations on having that hearing on July 26th.
Make a motion on that now?
No, I just want to give the opportunity for some feedback right now. And
well, I also think that by that time we may get kind of more of a feel about what fall is going to be like, or what, at least what the summer has been like as far as water use and weather.
Yeah, and that billing period through the mid-July tends to be one of the higher consumption billing periods. And so our ability to evaluate the community's most recent consumption changes, because, I mean, everybody in California is hearing the news, the drought is over. Is it really causing people, are we going to see people planting a lot of gardens? Are we going to see people, you know, replanting things that may have died? And that billing period that ends in July should be a good indicator there.
Yeah. Okay.
So with respect to water supplies themselves, the theme here is we're changing from a storage strategies to strategies associated with minimizing costs. We've discussed on many times that Oceano is one of the best water portfolios in the county, if not the best, in comparison to the size and the demand from the community. And during the last several years of drought, we haven't taken that for granted, though, and so a lot of the strategies were to maximize storage, including the storage that we have in Lopez Reservoir. But considering all things right now, the strategy is really changing to that of minimizing costs. And taking the supplies, State Water itself is at 85% allocation. And that's the highest it's been since 2006, when the State Department of Water Resources had provided for 100% allocation. What that means to Oceano is that we have the possibility of using 262.5 acre feet of water and storing 750 acre feet of water. We could also use 750 acre feet of water and store 262.5 acre feet of water, but that's kind of the range of what we can do. Using State Water, though, will depend on Lopez, and I'm going to talk about that in the context of upcoming decisions at Lopez and also with respect to groundwater pumping. But the maximum that we can store in State Water in any given year is 50%. And our basic allocation is 750 acre feet per year, but we also have drought buffer of 750 acre feet per year. The basic allocation is that which we have capacity to deliver. So we can never deliver more than 750 acre feet per year. But because of the drought buffer, our total technical allocation is 1,500 acre feet per year. And since the maximum in any year is 50%, that's why we can potentially store 750. But that storage also depends on if San Luis Reservoir spills or not. So all water and storage leading into this last winter that various agencies held, we did not have any in storage in State Water Project. All water that was in storage was lost because the reservoir spilled because of the very wet winter. So when I say we have the possibility of storing 750, that's the maximum by contract. Well, if we have a really wet winter coming up again and it spills again, it means that we won't be able to store water. On the other hand, it means that next year we'll also have a high delivery percentage year. Maybe it's not 85%, but even at a 50% delivery year, we can get delivery of all 750 acre feet. And this last year, we only used about 700 acre feet. So, you know, the idea is we're great on State Water, whether we use some of it or not. We have the ability to store it. And the only thing that will prevent any real storage is if we have another wet winter, in which case, yay, we have a wet winter, and we'll be able to get delivery, and we will be able to get delivery of water next year. And so some ways, I think that State Water, and it's our best reliability factor, is right now, in terms of minimizing costs, the last thing that we want to think about, because when we take delivery of state water, it's a couple hundred plus dollars to have it pumped over from the, you know, the facilities over in the valley and the delta and everything. And so to try to avoid those pumping costs and save in the budget is one of the strategies. Now, Lopez is a little bit trickier because we've been storing water in Lopez for the last couple years, and now is really the time to use it. So we have been only using Lopez water since January. Once we knew that the winters were going to be productive, we've only been using Lopez water. And Lopez water helps to minimize our costs because it's a purely gravity system, so we really have no variable costs associated with it. Technically, under the contracts, there's a little bit of variable cost for chemicals, but those are so inconsequential that we haven't even seen them billed by the county. If they did, they would be, you know, pennies on the dollar. So anything that we can deliver from Lopez has no additional costs associated with it. And I say no additional because we know that both state water and Lopez water, we have a lot of fixed contract costs we have to pay on both of them. But what we're really working on right now is minimizing the variable costs or the incremental costs. So the more that we can take out of Lopez water, the more money we save. Staff report explains that there's two basic scenarios that exist, and part of which prevails depends on the county. As a little bit of a background, the Lopez water year starts on April 1st and it ends on March 31st of the following year. And as identified in the staff report, for April 1st of this year to March 31st of 2018, we're going to have a range of between 501 acre feet and a low to a high of 1,143 acre feet from Lopez. Now, our annual demand right now is running at about 700 acre feet, and perhaps it will go up because people, start again, maybe growing the lawn again or replanting or having some gardens. But if consumption stays at where it's been, and if it's the low amount, 501 acre feet available from Lopez, then we will need to make up some supplies with either the delivery of state water or groundwater. And as I mentioned, we can make up all that difference with state water and still maximize our storage on state water. But what it is really is, which is the less expensive option? Is it to bring in the state water or is it to pump groundwater? And we're evaluating that right now. They're pretty close to each other in general sense, $200 or so. But right now we're still using all of our Lopez water, and we've been pulling the utility bills for the last couple of years in order to compare them to actual pumping. Actually found where we have the ability to save a little bit more on utility bills. But in any case, that's the basic analysis right now. What's cheaper, to pump or to bring in some state water? But why such a range for Lopez? Why is it that we might have 501 acre feet versus why is it might that we have 1,143? And it goes back to the Lopez low reservoir response plan. And in the staff report, I keep using the word could, because the county has indicated that if the board declares the drought emergency over, then it's going to be the lower number, the 501 acre feet, that essentially the water we have stored right now in Lopez would be lost. Now, we're not totally convinced that the county's interpretation of the low reservoir response plan is correct, and I'm reviewing that with legal counsel. The idea is on May 2nd, the county already allocated that water to us, and so the question is, what is the language in the low reservoir response plan? If they've already allocated it to us, can they take it back away? And it needs to be, recognized by everybody. When the low reservoir response plan was put together in 2014, it was done pretty quick in order to get it in a place and start dealing with the drought. And so we need to look. I don't want to just jump to the assumption that the county's interpretation is correct. And I always like to work with legal counsel on those issues. But also the Zone 3 Advisory Committee will take that question up next week. And while it rained during this last season, The big question, though, is what's happened to the groundwater basin? Has the groundwater basin recovered, or is it still feeling the effects of the drought? And that evaluation is not done. That evaluation is just beginning. Also, we can look to the governor's executive order on terminating the drought. The governor still includes in that executive order that four counties still need to be careful and they still have drought response actions that they need to take. And that's really part of what Zone 3 is going to be looking at. Even though we know that the state of California is in a lot better shape and we know that San Luis Obispo County is in a lot better shape, how is our groundwater basin doing? And do we need to be cautious before we lift the drought emergency or stop acting under the low reservoir response plan? Because the low reservoir response plan is not just about Lopez Lake and the water behind the lake. It's a cornerstone to the interagency coordination throughout the drought, including decisions regarding how much we're going to pump. The attachment to the agenda materials on the annual report for the Northern Cities Management Area shows that in 2016, even before it started to rain, all of the agencies were doing a good job of minimizing pumping to help preserve the groundwater levels, even though we know that the groundwater levels had declined. Oceano itself only pumped 0.5% of our groundwater pumping allocation because we were pulling in as much state water as we could possibly pull in. And all of these items interrelate. The low reservoir response plan relates to what are the agencies doing with groundwater pumping, relates to what are some of the agencies doing with bringing in other supplies like state water that Oceano and Pismo Beach have. So the Zone 3 Advisory Committee and the Board of Supervisors really needs to take into the context of all of the supplies. But again, we know the groundwater levels are going up. They've come up. We also know that there's depressions in it. What's going to happen between now and the rest of the summer? And that information really needs to be known. The Zone 3 Advisory Committee has already acted once that they want to maintain the low reservoir response plan in effect. And so next Thursday evening, they're also going to be considering a letter to the Board of Supervisors that's consistent with that. Again, the preference is to extend the low reservoir response plan until we have clear and convincing evidence that the groundwater basin has recovered from the drought. In review of all three sources, state water, Lopez water, and groundwater, Oceano continues to be in very good shape. So while this decision is important for best practices, it still comes back to around is we have multiple sources, and our primary strategy this year is to be minimizing our costs. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Mr. Ragone, I do have a quick question on the under state water, second sentence. If on May 23rd the Board of Supervisors acts contrary to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee recommendations, the district will be able to pump groundwater or take state water deliveries to meet district demands and still be able to store 750 of state water?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the idea that because we now have drought buffer, it's essentially we'll be able to store that drought buffer and we can deliver up to 262.5 acre feet of water out of the state water project. Delivering 501 acre feet of Lopez water that's available, the only exception would be is if there becomes some sort of a delivery constraint. Don't really anticipate that right now, but that's all, you know, if there's a physical limitation on being able to take water. But because we get state water and Lopez water through the same pipeline, it's really not going to affect state water. It's just going to require us to do more groundwater pumping.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we need any action on this agenda?
So the single actionable item would be number two, the recommendation to establish July 26, 2017 as the date of a public hearing to consider rescinding Resolution 2014-15, which established water use prohibitions during the drought emergency. And I should add one additional comment, and that is the idea that if we're going to extend the drought emergency for Zone 3 or extend it for extend the use of the low reservoir response plan, some people might say, well, is that are you taking inconsistent action by rescinding 2014-15 but still wanting the emergency to stay in effect in Zone 3? That's a similar question for, like, the city of Arroyo Grande, who has recently reduced some of their conservation efforts. The idea is there's been a lot of hardship because of the drought, and certainly the water supply situation is better, and reducing those hardships makes sense. And so these types of actions help to reduce the hardships. For Arroyo Grande, it's allowing people to use a little bit more water. For Oceano, it's reducing the cost of water a little bit, especially in the event that they're going to increase. So the actions aren't inconsistent, because what we're doing is trying to reduce the hardships while still maintaining some of those important conservation measures that are necessary. And we don't know how next winter is going to be. We could find ourselves in a dry winter, you know, just as fast as, you know, takes to get there.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to make a motion that we establish July 26th.
Nope. Public comment?
Huh? Oh, public comment, yeah. Sorry, Miss Lucy.
Yeah, I was sitting back there so quietly. I just forgot I was there.
You know, it really scares me that one season, we're talking about one season out of 5 years, where and people have the need to feel good or whatever it is. I think it's so dangerous, the message that's going out about the drought now, people pulling back, reducing. You know, I think if you talk to a few botanists and stuff, they'll probably tell you faster than any of the research studies looking at the basin, is that our plants and our trees are telling us, no, I still don't have enough water. You know, the tap roots on a lot of these trees are dying, you know, so you might want to look at that. I don't think that basin has, you don't abuse a basin to that degree for 5 years and in one season recuperate. So it's dangerous, the message that's going out there. And I know that people are very desperate to feel good about something right now because things are so gloomy, but ignoring the fact that we came dangerously close there, too close for comfort for 5 years, and one season is not going to reverse that. So if Oceano could figure out that message, you know, I think it would do everybody justice. As a member of the NCMA, I would strongly encourage the representatives there to encourage our neighbors to diversify their water portfolios. They're now leaning back on their loins. They're not being called on the carpet on the minimum investments they're making on their water sources. And so I'm asking you to please kind of push them along, encourage them, tell them I don't want to come yelling at them. And now's the time to get some more water into their geographic areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Close public comment now.
No.
Okay. Well, and I think that's part of the message that Andrew is prepped to take to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee as well.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look forward to that meeting next week. So, I'd like to make a motion to establish July 26, 2017 as the date of public hearing to consider rescinding Resolution 2014-15, which established water use prohibitions during the drought emergency.
I'd second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0.
Ancillary to this discussion, I just heard on the news today that Santa Barbara is going to get their desal plant operative within the next day or two. Something like 3 million gallons a day.
Yes, that's an interesting story because they built it in the last drought, and as soon as it was over, they decommissioned it, sold a bunch of parts, and then had to rebuild it again.
And it's running now that the drought is over, sort of. But I don't think the drought isn't over in Santa Barbara County, is it?
I'm not sure of the status.
I know Lake Kachuma didn't fill very well.
Yeah.
It needed a lot of water.
Yeah. Moving on, item 10, public hearing. Public hearing to consider a resolution approving the report on public facilities fees dated April 12th, 2017, and making findings required by the Mitigation Fee Act.
President White, members of the board, we've had a couple of items already this year. This resolution itself is directed by the agreement that your board adopted earlier this year on February 22nd, requiring us to evaluate public facilities fees that they're generating, collecting, and then providing to us. And as the quick reminder, public facilities fees are intended to address the impact of new development. And so the basic premise is, what are the additional facilities that we need to, or equipment that we need to purchase in order to provide services to new development? And the plan includes for Oceano two basic, it's all fire related. One is to provide permanent housing for the fire crews, and the second is for the new engines that would be required, not replacement engines. And there's the Mitigation Fee Act, which is really provides the state statutes that provide the guidance. And so from the county, we got population estimates, and we know that they collect about 90 cents per square foot on new development. We projected how much revenues would we get over time, what would be the costs associated with the improvements that are necessary. And the bottom line is that the report and the recommendations show that those public facilities fees that are being collected by the county and transmitted to Oceano are appropriate. They meet the nexus requirements, and there's a lot of documentation in the reports showing that. If and upon adopted by your board, we'll be transmitting the resolution to the county. They haven't scheduled yet a date that they're going to take all this stuff to the Board of Supervisors, because there's, I think, four different fire agencies in the county that have similar arrangements as we do. One of the other agencies have done already what we're doing right now and has transmitted that to the county, so we'll be number two. And they really want to wait till they get number three and number four, and so they can package them all up to the Board of Supervisors. It's a lot of number crunching, but everything is all justified, works out really well. I wanted, though, talk about a couple of other things that are identified in the report, and that is that both the facilities for the expansion of this structure to provide permanent housing, as well as the new fire engines that were originally projected, were really done prior to 2010 and when the Five Cities Fire Authority was created. Now, these public facilities plans are really only go through major updates every 5 years. And so in here, I've identified the two things that we should really be doing prior to the county's 2020 update. One thing is that the Five Cities Fire Authority is going through a strategic plan right now, and they're going to be identifying what their new equipment needs are. And so the equipment analysis that is in this report is based on the evaluation that currently exists, but it needs to be updated when the Five Cities Fire Authority strategic plan is updated. And the basic idea with Five Cities Fire Authority is, by the three agencies, Arroyo Grande, Oceano, and Grover, getting together, we're going to be more cost-effective. So that's something that we can anticipate that will be addressed in the 2020 update. The second thing that we're going to address in the 2020 update is, A, we need to either proceed with in early 2022 or so, with the expansion of this facility for permanent housing for the fire crews. That becomes feasible in about 2022 because that's when the debt for the sheriff's building will be paid off, and that we have to renegotiate that lease or with the sheriff's facility. But in discussions with the county sheriff, it's clear that even with the desire to open up a substation in Napomo, they're clearly going to keep the Oceano substation operating. They need both of them. County sheriff has a lot of acreage, a lot of territory to cover, and so in 2022, with the completion of that existing term, all the debt that was incurred in order to build that facility will be over, and so for then the lease revenues after that will be debt free. That creates then a revenue stream that, combined with public facilities fees, will allow us to have all the funding necessary in order to provide for the permanent housing. I also include in there that I think it would be a good idea for us to see whether or not it's feasible to construct a new fire station on other district property. It'd be speculative to say whether that's feasible or not, but it would be a good thing to evaluate. Some of the questions that would come up is how would we repurpose the existing structure? But because Fire City's Fire Authority is operating independent of Oceano Community Services District, there's credence to having an independent facility. I think there's possibility that it could really help with beautifying sort of the governmental area here in Oceano. And if there's good purposes in repurposing the good reasons in repurposing the existing fire station, perhaps something that's recreational oriented or whatever, then we might find ourselves with multiple opportunities. We've discussed that at a prior meeting too, and I don't think that feasibility analysis will be that difficult. But again, prior to the 2020 update, I think that would be good to do so that when the 2022 comes around, we know that we're either what we're going to be doing, whether it's upgrading this existing structure or pursuing a new structure for the fire operations. Last is a sort of one of the other notes is that this action is necessary so that we can then put the money together for the emergency generator. The report identifies that the emergency generator cannot be fully funded with public facilities fees, and we've analyzed what those numbers are. We're wanting to preserve other district revenues for fire operations because we know we have a tight budget next year for Five Cities Fire Authority. What you can anticipate is that I'll come back with a recommendation when we're ready to go out to bid on the emergency generator in the very near future to borrow some of the money from the public facilities fees in order to round out the money. That has to be done by resolution. Payment return, repayment terms have to be very explicit per the government code. But that will help get us the emergency generator done. And again, with the new, in 2022, with the continuation of the lease with the sheriff, or in the event that they left, then we'd have to find another tenant. But the feasibility is of repaying those funds borrowed for the emergency generator then is solid enough to meet the requirements of the Mitigation Fee Act. So we still will have some additional actions in the near future regarding the emergency generator. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Don't think so. We've been over this a few times.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any public comments on this item?
Okay, well, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the
resolution.
The resolution. I'll read the resolution of the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District approving the report on public facilities fees dated April 12, 2017, and making findings required by the Mitigation Fee Act.
I second.
And roll call.
Roll call vote. please, Madam Acting Secretary, Financial Director.
Director Bonet?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Colwell?
Yes.
Vice President Austin?
Yes.
President White?
Yes. Thank you for all the work that's gone into getting this. There's a lot of work in meeting all the requirements of the Facilities Act.
Yeah, I was really kind of amazed that considering the nature of the informal relationship of the county to what is now a formal relationship, I was kind of amazed that the numbers worked out as well as they did. But I guess we have to give credit to the county for a job well done when they established the fee amounts.
Yeah. It ended up that way.
Yeah.
Very good.
Moving on to item 11, any written communications? Late received written communications?
Nope.
Move on to future agenda items and hearing items as well.
And so, you know, these are the ones that we've previously identified. The only one that I really want to add and talk about it briefly here is with respect to the solid waste programs. Because I think that in order to do the outreach efforts and to really be able to work with the community on the programs that your board has already adopted, I'd like to be able to come back and talk about potentially having a permanent part-time position. Ideally, it would be somebody in the community. You know, we know that we can't make that as a condition of employment, but that's kind of what the ideal situation would be. But an individual who can go out and whether it's talking with the residents like who showed up today during public comment and to promote the cleaner community, I think it's really important. With the franchise fees we have that we generate from the South County Sanitary and the funds that we have in reserve, obviously we'd run through those as well. But I think it would be really important because we've got some momentum, some of the policies have been adopted, and to get somebody out on the street to actually really help in meeting with property owners and residents and businesses to help, you know, promote a cleaner community would be very helpful. You know, we have 7 people on staff, and we're all stretched, you know, to about as thin as we can go.
What happened to the young man that started the program? Is he available? Or?
So Mr. Grable has gained full-time employment with the city of Lompoc. And we had anticipated that because he had graduated from Cal Poly and was kind of doing this professional internship. And you know, he got done what we asked him to do. And he was able to get, you know, a full-time career position.
Well, it was such a good job. I like to see it. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
So we're going to put that on the agenda?
Yes.
Okay.
I got that. And I think it's good to do as part of budget discussions as well. So we'll probably preview it first before the budgets, and then based on whatever direction your board gives us, then we would address it subsequently in the budget. And then on item 14, future hearing items is budgets. And now we also have to add to that the July 26th hearing for considering rescinding resolution 2014-15.
Okay. We got anything else? Is there anything else?
I don't know if there's any public comment on
any
future
more
agenda
comment?
Items.
Well, I'm just, make a motion.
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting tonight.
Second.
It's all moved. Meeting adjourned.
Meeting adjourned.
Public comment.